Can unique compounds found in the cannabis plant protect you, protect your health? Up next, Kurt Werner joins us. We'll be talking with him about his work, Marijuana Gateway to Health, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Let me tell you a little bit about our next guest, Clint Werner, Marijuana Gateway to Health. Clint has degrees in journalism and library science, has worked in the field of preventative health care for more than 25 years. He has studied macrobiotic cooking. That was in Boston in 85, relocating to San Francisco. In that area, he co-authored with the San Francisco Police Department's Health and Fitness Plan in 1987, working to teach patients how to improve their health and diet as well. Here he is on Coast to Coast. Clint, how are you?
I'm great, and I really appreciate you having me on, George. This is a thrill. I've listened to this program since 1994 and 95 when Art Bell had on the Crystal Skull. That was my first program.
Way back. What is macrobiotic cooking, by the way?
Macrobiotics is really one of the foundation approaches to health food and natural foods. It's sort of derived from Japanese peasant cooking, and it's the idea that if you eat foods that are appropriate for human beings, cooked in ways that are harmonious with the seasons, then you can optimize your physical health and resist disease.
Fascinating. Really is. Back in St. Louis, I had an opportunity to interview some people. We were talking about the medicinal uses of marijuana, and they had eye problems, other kinds of health problems. They could not take, Clint, pharmaceutical painkillers. It was just hurting them. They switched to medicinal marijuana, and they just were making incredible leaps in their own health. One lady was on my program literally crying that it had basically saved her life. I created a sensitivity at that point to people who need this to help themselves, and so much so, there was a writer for the Riverfront Times at the time in St. Louis, which was an alternative newspaper, and he said, you know what, I've never heard this on radio before, the turnaround of a talk show host who became so sensitive to the plight of people that have pain and can't take pharmaceutical pills. And that's when I started studying this. So you're on to something with this. There's no question.
It's an amazing field of biological science. And it really is, in a sense, mind-blowing what we're learning about the potential of this plant. People have known for thousands of years that it has properties that help to alleviate the misery caused by diseases, but now we're really seeing that the compounds in it work against disease processes in the body. And, you know, what you said is true. When you have a one-on-one encounter with someone whose life has been salvaged by this plant, this substance, cannabis marijuana, you can't cling to the old, outdated reefer madness ideology from last century.
No, not at all. And of course, this program is about marijuana and health. A lot of people are saying, geez, are you endorsing the use of marijuana? Well, no, we're not talking about that tonight. We're not talking about people who are using this for their own purposes other than health. But I will say that I have gone on record as saying that our policy against drugs, all drugs, is a disaster. And it just needs to be totally tossed out. I have taken the position, Clint, that all drugs should be legalized and crime will plummet. And we're talking primarily of the harder drugs. But I'm convinced that if government had set up programs for people where they can go and get their little drugs and do whatever they were doing with them, crime would drop. Do you think so?
I think so. And I think that Portugal has had some good success with that. And they have, you know, reduced the rate of overdose deaths and conversions into drug addiction, too. It seems like the rates have dropped. It seems like if you take out some of that outlaw appeal to it and medicalize it as a health problem, then you lose a certain segment of the population who's going to experiment and get in trouble with harder drugs.
I think so, too. If you educate people, they're going to realize, you know what, this is not good for me. I'm not going to do this. Not going to take these harder drugs, and I'm going to pass. I also think at the same time, if we're to do that and legalize it, you completely disband the Internal Revenue Service and go to a use tax, because all the illicit trade money that they've been using overseas and, you know, the cartels, you at least start to tax that.
Right. Yeah. Or you eliminate the cartels and you turn, you know, you have, first of all, you'd have safer drugs because they would be produced in a laboratory instead of, you know, somebody's bathtub or kitchen or whatever. And you would take that factor away from the drug gangs, and it would go into, you know, stay into communities. Certainly that's, you know, what we see with marijuana, medical marijuana, that it's produced a real resurgence of certain areas in California because it's been allowed, and it creates jobs and tax money, and it just brings it out of the shadows and the back alleys.
Clint, why is there this massive fight with the federal government and states over the use of marijuana and medical marijuana, where they want to threaten and shut down these shops?
It's insane, George. You know, this was a policy, an initiative here in California we've passed, and 17 states have medical marijuana laws, and the District of Columbia. And it's just, the government is irrational. And I really, some of it I think is they're protecting what I would call the prison industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
The marijuana laws feed fairly complacent, passive people into the prison system, the prison industry, and they serve as essentially slave labor for certain companies. And that's a big part of it. Another part of it, I think, is probably the potential for very cheap, effective remedies against pain, rashes, all kinds of illnesses that pharmaceutical companies are making now that have far more severe side effects.
Oh, there's no question about it. I've done so much extensive research into this, Clint, as you have, and you know, I am not a booster of a lot of pharmaceutical pain pills and things like that. There's got to be natural ways to do it, but the lobby is so strong that they're crushing this. Was marijuana ever legal in this country at some point?
Oh, it was, until it was not quite 80 years ago, I believe. In fact, it was available, much like the compounds that you can get in dispensaries today were available then. Tinctures, pills, they had extracts of cannabis. It was called Indian hemp. And these were tinctures that you could take drops of, and that introduced these compounds into the body that worked against so many different illnesses and maladies, pain.
Glaucoma had fought, right?
Glaucoma. And what's even, you know, when you talk about the eyes, they found that this one cannabinoid, CBD, which is not prevalent in commercial marijuana, but is in medical marijuana. In other words, it has to be bred to have this cannabinoid in it because it's not psychoactive. There's no appeal for the black market for it. But this cannabinoid actually protects the eyes of diabetics from diabetic retinopathy, which is the
interesting
largest cause of blindness in the United States.
What is a cannabinoid?
So this is such a fascinating story. The whole process that's led us to where we are now in this biological science field of cannabis science. People knew that marijuana, cannabis, had incredible therapeutic effects for, like I said, thousands of years, but no one knew how it worked. And around about 1960, there was a young biology researcher, chemistry researcher from Israel named Raphael Mechoulam, and he decided to see if he couldn't isolate what this molecule is, or these molecules are, that cause the psychoactive effects of cannabis. So he worked with modern techniques that had become available, and he was able to find that it was this one molecule, THC, delta-9-tetrahydrocannabinol, and he named it a cannabinoid because it came from the cannabis plant. Then there were other cannabinoids, CBN, CBD, And they kept finding more and more in this family. And it's unique to the marijuana cannabis plant, this family of compounds. And so they still did not know how it did what it did in terms of psychoactivity until as recently as 1988. A researcher, Alan Howlett, she and her grad student, I believe William Devane, took cannabinoid and labeled and tagged it with radioactive iridium, and then followed its course through a rat and found where it docked in the brain, and discovered that we have receptors in our body that match up to these cannabis molecules, these cannabinoids. They receive them like a lock and key, and it's a sort of communication system. So over the next decade and a half, scientists spent the time plotting out that we have not only in our central nervous system, but distributed essentially throughout every organ and system in our body, cannabinoid receptors. And what they knew is that we don't have these receptors because the plant makes the compounds. We must generate something ourselves that works on these receptors. So they found that we do have compounds that are very much like THC and CBD. They're called anandamide and 2-AG. And these are cannabinoids, endocannabinoids, inside cannabinoids that we produce within our bodies to regulate health through this communication system.
Amazing.
It's really mind-blowing.
It's something, too, how this planet, and I've talked about this before, seems to have a cure for just about everything once you find the right plant. It's bizarre, isn't it?
That's true. I mean, there's so many things we're discovering when we go back and look at what was discarded during the great pharmaceutical revolution. The old knowledge, the herbal knowledge, and, you know, things like turmeric and ginger. And really, you know, you can put together such a dynamic anti-disease lifestyle by sort of eating the foods that people ate before they were processed and actually using cannabis or cannabis products.
Absolutely. We received over the weekend some bad news about my younger sister, which I won't get into right now. But I have been asking her for 2 years to use turmeric and some other alternative things, and she hasn't done it yet. And I wish she would have, or would still start. But it is to me, this planet is alive, Clint. It functions that way, and everything we need once we find it is here.
It's true. It's amazing, and that's the other thing about, you know, of course, cannabis is hemp. It provides us with fiber and fuel. Harkening back to the earlier hours, you can produce a clean fuel from cannabis, lacquers, varnishes, all types of things.
Let's talk a little bit about these cannabinoids and what they do to protect us, first of all, from cancer. What have you discovered?
Well, it is really unbelievable. I mean, this revolution in our knowledge, it'll blow your mind. That's why I wrote my book, Marijuana Gateway to Health, so people can know this, because it's going underreported. And it was, I couldn't believe it when I started finding this treasure trove of data. So what happens is these cannabinoids that we produce in our body, they link into these receptors and they convey information. It's sort of like an information portal. And these cannabinoids fit into the receptor and communicate information to the body, to the organ system, to the cells through them. And what they do is, first, they prevent environments that give rise to diseases such as cancers and Alzheimer's disease and other illnesses. If you do become the victim of a disease process, they attack the disease process in really an amazing number of ways, especially with cancer, and then they trigger intrinsic repair mechanisms. So what they found is that THC has the ability to shrink tumors, and that these cannabinoids really, they have multifaceted effects such as killing mutated cells that, you know, are becoming cancer. They slow the growth of the cells. They prevent them from spreading. They inhibit the ability of a tumor, a mass of these cells, to produce the blood vessels that tap into the host, the patient, and drain them of nutrients. So they really have just like an amazing, multifaceted way of going after cancer. And what's actually even more fascinating, perhaps, is when they blocked the cannabinoid receptors, they still found activity with THC, that it independent in a different way, in a biochemical way, it attacked tumor cells.
It gets through the system one way or another, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really is amazing what an ally of our physiological systems this plant is. It's mind-blowing. Who would have thought? And that's the great, one of the really great stories is that it's sort of like a David and Goliath battle. Here the people are. They want access to this very, very, very cheap, sometimes free remedy that is more effective and less harmful than the medicines we've been presented with in many instances. And if you try and grow it or distribute it, they're going to throw you in prison.
Let's get into that. I want to talk with you about a study that just came out about young people and IQs as well, Clint. Get your reaction to that. But generally, if you want to fight it for cancer and things like that, how do you ingest it? Do you smoke it?
So here's there are two aspects of this. Some people use it to alleviate the symptoms of chemotherapy. But now that we have become aware of these really powerful anti-tumor effects, there's an effort to see if it can be used itself as a chemotherapy agent to kill off cancer cells because it has all these activities. And what people are finding is that, well, there's sort of two approaches that are very interesting that have come about and been facilitated largely by the state laws that allow a generous production of cannabis. In other words, if you are prohibited by law from growing it, most of it goes to the black market, but in a medical state, they can produce enough to experiment with and produce different remedies.
Okay.
So cannabis oil is on extracted cannabinoids that are concentrated down into a really potent, like dark, tarry concentrate. And these are being used by more and more people where they ingest like a gram a day, which is an enormous amount of cannabis, cannabinoids, cannabis product. Basically, it's like a pound or so goes into making a couple of syringes full of this. And I say syringes, but they are taken orally. It's the oral syringes, not for injection.
Okay.
And people are getting amazing reactions. They're getting, their tumors are shrinking. I know one woman who is completely free of her lung cancer.
Now, do they also smoke it?
Well, smoking has been the traditional way for alleviating nausea and pain, and it doesn't really seem to deliver enough of the saturation of the cannabinoids as the oil does. But vaporization, in other words, if you have cancer and you vaporize, especially lung cancer, because that delivers it into the lung.
Vaporizing, you know, like you would with a mister?
Yeah, it liberates the compounds that are good without producing the harmful gases from burning the plant material.
Right, like tobacco.
Right. So you just get the good without the bad and deliver it right into the lungs. So you can take the oil, you can vaporize, you can eat edibles, and just saturate the body. Now, the side effects of that are being seriously altered in terms of consciousness. People work up to it and build a tolerance, but you can get into an uncomfortable position from having too much cannabis oil. But it's not vomiting for 8 hours in a bucket from chemotherapy. And I'm not saying that chemotherapy doesn't have its place, but this might be a really viable.
Well, you know what? A cancer researcher told me not too long ago, Clint, that chemotherapy was poison. And that they wish they had a different way of fighting cancer. Hold on with us, Clint. We're going to come back, talk more about this on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, we'll take your phone calls next hour with Clint Werner as we talk about his work, Marijuana Gateway to Health. We'll get your thoughts and views on that next hour. More with him when I come back in just a second. Have you been to the Coast Store yet? You can. Brand new items. Those of you in the military, you know what scrambled egg hats are. We've got those now and some other great things. So just go take a look at it, see what you like. Pick some up for Christmas and other holidays if you like. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com and click the store button. And welcome back to Coast, Clint Werner with us, and we're talking about his work, Marijuana Gateway to Health. We've talked a lot about hemp oil being used as a cure for cancer as well. Is there a difference between marijuana and hemp, Clint?
There is. Well, there has been that distinction made. Traditionally, the cannabinoid remedies were called Indian hemp remedies, but now we've sort of drawn a distinction with marijuana representing the more psychoactive plant. It's the same plant, but they're different varieties, and through selective breeding, you can grow plants that have very low THC levels, but produce the fiber that is desirable for rope and canvas and so many other products.
Okay. Now, you also say that marijuana is being used for AIDS patients these days, so that's pretty new.
Well, actually, that's one of the ways the whole medical marijuana battle, revolution, however you want to call it, got revived. There was a first wave that came about and kind of petered out when they couldn't get a federal medical marijuana bill passed.
Right.
Interestingly enough, Newt Gingrich was the first sponsor of the first bill, a co-sponsor. He's had a flip, you know, turn of heart over that. But so the second wave came with the AIDS patients because there was a federal program established. It was almost impossible to get on for that provided marijuana to hard to treat patients, and AIDS patients found out that you could get on it with if you sent in your paperwork, and AIDS provided a massive number of patients who were willing to do a sort of fill out a form and send it in, and they flooded the system with requests for this medical marijuana the government provided. The government shut it down. AIDS patients were furious, and that's when the first dispensaries, medical marijuana dispensaries, were founded, and the whole movement of initiative, citizen voter initiatives, began. But what we've seen now is that the evidence is good. Not only does it trigger an appetite and suppress nausea in AIDS patients, but there's serious, solid evidence that the cannabinoids block the ability of the AIDS virus to actually infect new cells, and that through some type of mechanism, they stimulate the health of the immune system so that you get more fighter cells.
Can you get the marijuana without the high?
No. Well, that's a big area of controversy. You yes and no. The THC looks so far to be the workhorse of the medical effects, and THC is what causes the psychoactive effect.
Ah.
But the cannabinoid CBD is not psychoactive. And interestingly, there's this whole dynamic between these cannabinoids that's amazing. So if you have CBD in your marijuana, it will lower the amount of THC in it. It'll, because they sort of compete for, you know, production in the plant. But not only that, CBD steers some of the THC away from the central nervous system receptors and lets it do other work. And it's really fascinating that way, because you can get marijuana with THC and CBD, but it will produce a very minimal high, and it might just be more of a relaxation than an actual high, maybe a slight sense of well-being. But the key to that is having dispensaries, because the black market does not produce marijuana for sense of well-being, but for a high.
But for a high, that's true.
So you don't get the CBD in black market marijuana.
That's true. What's your gut tell you about where this all goes?
I think that those of us who stand in favor of medical marijuana are going to win. The science is on our side. It's not going to turn on a dime and reverse. every study that comes in supports the idea that marijuana, cannabis, provides our body with supplemental cannabinoids that amplify the beneficial effects of our own naturally produced cannabinoids. If you have this plant that produces anti-cancer activity, attacks tumor cells, shields the brain from the pathological changes that lead to Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia, protects the brain if there's a stroke or a head injury, people are going to want this. And when the people learn this, which is why I wrote my book, Marijuana Gateway to Health, they're, because no one else was getting it out. I couldn't believe I'm the guy who gets to write this book. You know, a fringy like me gets to write this major book. And it was just mind-blowing to me that no one else was writing it and that I'm the one shouting this information out. Because the mainstream media either treats it as a joke. Oh, I guess Cheech and Chong, you know, they're not going to get Alzheimer's. Or they ignore it. Exactly. Or they don't report it in the greater context and draw the lines that show that what I'm saying is true.
Give me your reaction to a study that came out last week that talked about marijuana smoking by teenagers lowers their IQ.
It doesn't. You know, a lot of people in our community who are in the medical marijuana community and movement sort of bristled at that. But in my book, I do have a chapter, Who Should Not Smoke or Who Should Not Use Marijuana? And basically, I say people who are planning a family, just to be careful, and teenagers, that's one group I say. And what I say is that it can be very distracting. If they start smoking regularly, they're not developing the skills they need for life to get out and have great lives. You need to find out where your talents lie and sharpen those talents when you're that age and be curious about things. And that can short-circuit that process, too much marijuana. But this does seem, I emailed a neurologist who has done a lot of research with cannabis and Alzheimer's because I knew I'd get a good reading on the study from him. And he says, you know, the adolescent brain is much different than the adult brain. So he doesn't necessarily see it as sort of a slanted hit piece. It could be very valid. And there's a lot of things that young people shouldn't do. Gambling, using cannabis, serious weight training, using, you know, driving cars, because it's not appropriate for them, and this seems to be one of those. But I do want to say there was an interesting study that showed that teenagers who are binge drinkers, if they smoked marijuana at the same time, they had a significant reduction in the brain damage caused by the alcohol compared to the teenagers who only drank alcohol.
All right, let's do this. When you look at alcohol, if you're at 0.08 in this country, you're considered legally drunk, and you can get your DUI and all kinds of problems. What is it with pot? I mean, what's the comparison there? Does it affect driving? And if it does, how many joints do you have to smoke before you get to that 0.08 type as you get with alcohol?
Okay, here's a sensitive area because in my book I say, obviously, after you've smoked marijuana or eaten it or used it, you really shouldn't get behind the wheel of a car. But interesting research has really come out that is kind of shocking, and it was from a website, forautoinsurancequote.com, and they found that their conclusion was marijuana users as a group can expect in the future to see lower insurance rates than non-marijuana users because they're safer drivers. Drivers with THC in their systems have accident responsibility rates lower than those of drug
users. All right, but
drivers.
They're not doing 4 miles an hour on the freeway, are they?
Well, that is the difference in alcohol and cannabis use and driving. The alcohol user has this sort of sense of bravado, a dulled sense of self-preservation and paranoia. The marijuana user generally says, you know what, I can tell I'm not ready to drive. Or if they have to drive, they pay more attention to driving and drive more slowly, put more distance between themselves and other cars, and do not do risky passing and things like that. And it's really, really shocking because, I mean, you know, no one wants screwy people drive, you know, it puts us all at risk.
Oh, sure.
But the evidence really does say that there is not a huge concern with cannabis drivers. And in fact, there medical marijuana states that have medical marijuana laws have seen a significant decrease in traffic fatalities.
Would you be in support of medical doctors prescribing marijuana?
I think that if there could be some cannabis remedies that are prescribed by medical doctors, but I don't think that should be a monopoly. That should be for the people who want to go through their doctors to seek it. But
you want it more available naturally, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
I think it should be more like an herbal remedy with restrictions on access, you know, by young people. Some of the age restrictions we put on alcohol and cigarettes.
Well, what if they gave out, think about this for a second, Clint. What if, you know, your medical doctor generally will give you what you want anyway. So what if he did it by a prescription? I mean, that way, you know, kids couldn't get it. And, you know, it would be effective, assuming you trust that doctor.
Well, but then what you're talking about is involving a whole big pharma industry in something that could be community-based.
True. There's no question. Big pharma will take over.
And they're trying to. There's a company that has been bought by Bayer that produces under-the-tongue whole cannabinoid spray, but it's going to cost 1,000 times more than what you can get in a dispensary.
Now that's a key.
Almost identical.
Sure. The insurance rates would go through the roof on something like that.
And we, you know, we have like guilds in California where they are collectives and they produce organic cannabis and then they produce their own oil or they produce balms. You know, I burned my hand. I grabbed a pot that was, you know, overheated, the handle on the stove a few weeks ago, pain up to my elbow. I ran into the bathroom and I got some balm, Mary Jane's medicated cannabis salve, threw it on my fingers that had third degree burns. The pain stopped immediately. There was no blistering, no redness. I couldn't believe it. I just thought I'd try it and see. And the pain, 100% pain relief immediately. Why don't we have this in burn clinics everywhere?
Can states set up like a blind study and say, look, all right, maybe before we legalize it, and then we'd have to fight the Fed anyways, but maybe before we legalize it, let's do a blind study. Let's make sure it's controlled. Let's have a group of people in there that use it and don't, and see what happens. Driving habits, whether they get tickets, health, and let's just check them all out. Would that work? Would that convince legislators to pass this afterward?
Well, I think that the population, the number of subjects you'd have to do for that is pretty huge. But you can do epidemiological studies like the one I mentioned about driving. That was a study, you know, that looked at what is happening in real life in a patient population using cannabis in relation to the state. That's how a lot of this information is coming through, is by, you know, epidemiological studies looking at what's happening in big populations. But there was a program here in California until we ran out of money to do clinical trials with cannabis. Here's the thing, George. Here's the insanity of it. It is blockaded to do research into cannabis in the United States if you're looking for benefits.
Right.
You're not allowed to, because the only source for research-grade cannabis is the National Institute on Drug Abuse, whose congressional mandate states that they can only provide material and funding to research that assesses harm. So you really have to do a Trojan horse study where you pretend to find harm, but you have secondary values that find benefit.
You mean they won't do it if it's beneficial for someone?
No, they won't. They will not provide marijuana to any research intended to show benefit.
Why? The lobby.
Reefer madness. When they established the National Institute on Drug Abuse back in the early 70s to be the gatekeeper for research into controlled substances, their congressional mandate was to only research the chemistry or the harmful effects. They're not allowed to look at the beneficial effects. It's like, you know, we laugh or we mock the Catholic Church and the Pope with Galileo centuries ago, but this is the same mindset. It is a war on knowledge. But what's interesting is a lot of the harm assessment studies they do turn out to show benefit.
Well, that's a good point. Now, tell me a little bit about marijuana saving professional football. You wrote a story about that.
I did. Could marijuana save professional football? Because there's this huge lawsuit by ex-players who are having serious mental ailments that are very similar to Alzheimer's or Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, neurological damage from the constant collisions and head injuries that cause the buildup of scar tissue in the brain that interrupts the transmission of thought and impulse and signaling. And what researchers have found is that THC and CBD go into the brain, and first thing they do is they neutralize any inflammation, which is the environment that gives rise to the deposit of the plaque and the formation of scar tissue. Then they break up the plaque and neutralize the scar tissue. Then THC actually triggers adult hippocampal neurogenesis, the production of healthy, functional new brain cells. The opposite of what we were told for years, that marijuana destroys brain cells, it actually triggers the production of new functional brain cells. And so I say that, you know, in professional football, this is an answer. They should be given cannabinoids after practice and after games because there's a chain reaction of brain damage, and THC stops that chain reaction. It neutralizes this cascade of harmful chemicals through the brain.
Why is the federal government cracking down on states when I thought they were going to be a little more lenient?
Well, they were, you know. Obama was very lenient, and things were really going well, and then all of a sudden, he lost his mind over this issue, or the federal attorneys decided to take things onto their own hand and went crazy and have really just attacked this with, you know, a level of viciousness that we didn't see with any other administration. They're real. I mean, the Bush administration, they would shut down some clinics, but they didn't indict the people who are running them. Obama's indicting these people. There's a guy who's facing life in prison for running a certified cannabis clinic.
A certified clinic?
Yeah, and he's going to face life in prison under this administration.
Is the state trying to save him? Can they?
You know, our state senators are out to lunch on this. Boxer and Feinstein have been in absentia since the beginning of it.
Well, they did the Pontius Pilate routine on this guy. Huh?
Oh, they're terrible. You know, I'm just so disillusioned with it. You know, Lily Tomlin once said, I worry that no matter how cynical I get, it's not enough to keep up. And sometimes I feel like that with these so-called public servants.
Yet in spite of all of this, Clint, you think you can win?
I think, you know, it's inevitable because the people are going to vote on legalization in some states, and I think it will win possibly in Colorado or Oregon. I'm not so sure about Washington. That's a more iffy law. But once people learn that there is a plant, and there's a neurologist, he said his motto is a puff is enough. One puff of cannabis a day is enough to offer significant protection to the aging brain from Alzheimer's. When people learn this, they're going to want it.
That's really amazing.
In every neighborhood, they're going to want access to medical cannabis. And they don't have to smoke it. They can get, like I said, tincture. Take a few drops before bed and not get high, but interrupt the degenerative process that leads to Alzheimer's or cancer.
What's it do to the heart when you smoke? Anything? Does it defibrillate you or anything like that?
It can increase the heart rate, especially for naive users, and that tends to abate as people work into it and adapt to it. It tends to cause a drop in blood pressure, and the heart rate can compensate for that.
So if you've had problems, you should be careful there.
Yeah, you know, there was a study that found that smoking cannabis caused a certain likelihood for an increase of heart disease in a certain population, but the population were people who were so sedentary and obese and heart, you know, had cardiac issues anyway, that it was using cannabis for them was the equivalent of mowing the lawn.
All right, Clint, stay with us. We're going to come back for another hour of phone calls with you as we talk about your work, Marijuana Gateway to Health. Let me flip the switch. We'll take your calls. in just a moment.